Thanks for tuning in to Best Show Ever, a podcast presented by the Englert Theater. On this week's episode, we're talking to beloved Iowa City musician Blake Shaw. More specifically, we're talking to Blake about the art of practice. When to practice, how to practice, why to practice, etc., etc. So stick around for some free advice from self-taught legend, Mr. Shaw. Blake Shaw is a double bassist and vocalist residing in Iowa City. He plays, he teaches, he composes, he arranges, he produces. He's a bit of a Renaissance man, if you will. It's possible you've seen him around town either performing solo with the Blake Shaw Quintet, Trio, Alex Rush, University of Iowa Jazz faculty, or really any other host of lineups. He also helps program arts happenings, including the Iowa City Jazz Festival and Pride. Blake, so lovely to have you here today on the Best Show Ever podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much. You have no idea how much I love you. I think you get that a lot. I think a lot of people tell you that they love you, but I adore you. Aww. Everything you do is just so wonderful. So the pleasure is mine is what I'm trying to say.
Wow, this is just the Gassing Ellie Up podcast, and I'm here for it. Okay, so you've done a lot of interviews and, you know, been on TV and the works because you are such a wonderful jazz musician. But I kind of want to get an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at your creative process. Mm-hmm. So today I want to talk a bit about the art of practicing, which you're one of the few people who are like, I'm so excited to practice. Mm-hmm. I've been practicing this and I'm having so much fun. And I'm whenever I think of practicing, I'm like, ugh, work. I'm interested in hearing more. Mm-hmm. I guess first question is, how often do you practice?
First, this is such a great question. I love talking about this. And you're right, I do love practicing. And I work with so many different levels of students too, that just in the last few years, I've really learned more about practicing for myself. So when you ask that question, how much do you practice? What kind of practice? Because I touch my instrument every single day, mm-hmm. but I have different types of practicing that I do.
Okay, so what are the different types, would you say?
My favorite kind of practicing that I do most often is this searching, where I just sit down and I play. It's like a run-on sentence sometimes, or just, I know some writers, the way they get ideas out is just, they just write, mm-hmm. you know, whatever comes to their head, they do that. So I kind of do that. That's, like I said, my favorite type of practicing. And that's where I get a lot of my composition and arranging ideas and, you know, all the dorky little things that I like to do in my songs. And just playing off my mood. I think go from the best to the least. My least favorite type of practicing is that little work, the little nuances that end up making you sound way better, but are more tedious. Mm. That stuff, I have specific times for that, and I spend a certain amount of time on those things. And
how did you develop like the self-discipline for practice? Do you think that was something you learned in school or something you just had naturally? Or
Unfortunately, it's kind of naturally. I began my music as mostly self-taught. You know, I was in band in high school, but it wasn't always the music that I was interested in. And they didn't have strings. So I was guitar and singing outside in open mics and such like that, and learning bass. Like, most of that was self-taught. It was something that I wanted to do. It was a hobby. It was something that I really, really loved to do, that the searching part, the discovery, that was always fun to me. So as I got higher and higher in my education, when I was given assignments to practice, like that was always fun. I guess I've been privileged because I've in education in school, I've always been playing music that I loved or I could love, fall in love with. You know, I haven't really played too much music that I, you know, hated.
Right.
When I have to work with students that have trouble making time for practice, I try to talk to them about what they love and how they can love practicing. How can they make what they love into practicing? And it comes down to what they need, you know, what they want to get better at. And so we work with that, and then I add some little things on the side that they might not be too happy about.
Mm. Do you feel like you notice a change in your students, like when they start to really understand a love for practicing or when they just start doing it more? Is that noticeable to you?
I think more so their personality or the way they carry themselves. They, you know, because now it's theirs, they have this ownership over it. They're taking control of how they're doing it. It's more personal to them. So that I think I see that their morale change a little bit faster than you know, their skills at music. Which I don't think that's a negative thing to say, but I think it's nice to see that those aha moments and them really taking charge of their learning.
Tell us a little bit more about what it looks like when you're practicing. What kind of boundaries do you need to set up for yourself? How do you get into a headspace for it, if at all?
For me, personally, I have a very short attention span. Anyone that's listening probably, no, yeah, duh. We know, Blake. So I'm always doing several things at once. This happens in a couple different ways. It could be I'm practicing several different types of music or pieces at once, or maybe I'm doing something around the house, sending emails or, you know, those kind of things. And for me, when I'm playing music, I play until I don't like to hammer things in. If I'm not getting it, I think I have set my boundaries at a proper length. I know when to stop and take a break and get away from it.
Mm.
I tell this to my students all the time too. Just try to do what's needed, because if you push yourself in a hurtful way, physically or mentally, and I'm speaking either way, like it's just not going to be helpful. You know, what's going to be helpful in the long run? You know, making yourself hate this piece or learning little bits by bits and putting it all together, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think there's some restraint, too. And I was trying to read just a tiny bit about, like, the science of practicing before this. And one of the main recommendations was starting slow, like doing things very slow over and over again and then speeding up.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess a lot of people's issue is wanting to jump to the finish line so quick, which I think is natural, especially in a super productivity-driven society, to like want to get somewhere so fast and have something to show for the time. But really, a lot of what practices is like the slow repetition and, I don't know.
A really wise drummer told me once, "You can't do it fast if you can't do it slow." So I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I a lot of my practice for the stuff that I'm going to be playing on stage or at a gig somewhere, I always practice it way slower. And I don't really get to performance tempo until I'm on the gig. Mm. You know, and I don't... Because when I'm practicing slowly, you can concentrate on every little movement that you're doing, every single note that you're doing. So when I get to the performance, I feel prepared. I know exactly what I'm going to do here, or I know exactly what I'm not going to do because I'm going to make it up in this area or something like that. I think, yeah, slow practice is the best way to really concentrate.
We'll be right back in conversation with Blake Shaw after a quick word from our development director, Katie Roche.
The Englert Theatre has been a cultural leader in our community for generations, and we want to make sure that the Englert continues to impact our community in a positive way for years to come. You can help ensure our place in the future of this community by joining our Fellowship for the Future program. By making a fellowship gift commitment, you lay down the sturdy foundation we need to grow and make even bigger community impacts. If you are excited about a future for Iowa City that has a thriving and innovative arts community, please consider our leadership level membership group, the Fellowship for the Future. Invest $100 per month or more for a 3-year period at englert.org/fellowship or contact us to talk more about what we can build together.
How do you know when you've practiced enough for a certain thing? If like you're going to perform a certain piece, is there a moment or a signifier as to when you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is ready to go?
This, okay, so yeah, this is ready for this gig. You know, I'm naughty. I love practicing on stage.
Yeah.
I play, and I'm playing a lot of gigs, so yeah. I hope the right people are listening to this podcast, because yeah. So, I'm going to tell some secrets. The secrets of Blake's life, okay? So I like to practice on gigs, and I mess up. You know, I'm not very afraid of messing up. So I'll know a tune well enough to fake it. You know, the things that I mess up are minute. You know, I usually my hands will keep going, but I'll mess up the words or the melody or something. That's usually the first to go. Just being the bass player and the singer is a tough job, but because I'm bassist first, that usually stays. Yeah, I get on the gig and I play, the people that I play with are just as flexible as me, so I feel really comfortable to try new things. And the new stuff that I play, it's usually sang or played better while being a little improvisatory, jazz, or jazz ever related. Heard it? Yeah. All right. So like, I don't feel bad for kind of having to make up some melodies sometimes, because it's, you know, you hear it in when people are inflecting melodies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was a really long answer for
that. No, that was good. I feel like that is one thing about jazz too, though. It kind of is more focused on giving you the tools rather than telling you exactly how to do something.
I get so sad when people rag on jazz, but I know it's just their lack of understanding, and I hope that doesn't sound mean, but jazz really is just this wonderful tool that makes you better at learning things. You know, there's so many different types of grooves just in this tiny jazz genre that you have to be constantly listening and refining yourself and learning how to do things. And that has just spilled over into everything else that I've played. And I just want everybody to be happy and play music very well. That's it.
Is there a time when you feel like you have the most aha moments? Is it when you're practice performing, or when you're doing what you said before and you're searching and noodling around? Mm-hmm. When do you make the most discoveries, I guess?
Yeah, that searching, that noodling phase is all my aha things.
Yeah.
When I'm practicing a piece, you know, I want it to sound this way, so I'm trying to get there. And then maybe it's not really an aha when I achieve it. It's like, finally, God. You know, but yeah, ahas, you know, when I'm searching for that sound. I do a lot of listening where I and stealing, where I steal parts, You know, instead of, some people like to transcribe a whole thing, but I like just to transcribe the bits that make my ear feel really good. So I know what that sound is. And then, so when I'm noodling around and those kind of things come out, it's like, finally, you know, it sometimes it takes a while for your ideas to come out, the ideas that you're working on, I guess.
Yeah. Would you consider listening to other people's music as practice in a way, or not a physical practice, but a mental practice?
Absolutely. I'm glad you said this because I do practice physically a lot, but I count some deep listening as practice. That is absolutely practicing. You, in order to recreate the sounds that you want, you have to know what those sounds sound like, you know, in I didn't specifically say good or bad sounds, because I don't know, that's too subjective. But whatever sounds you want to make, if you want to be intent on and direct with the sounds that you're making, you have to know what they sound like. And I just don't think you can make good decisions by listening to very few types of examples. I think you have to listen a whole bunch to many, many examples to make a decision for yourself that is like based on knowledge. Weird, right?
What would you define as good listening or as proper listening, I guess?
I don't know how to answer that question.
Or what do you feel like you're doing when you're listening? Or what is your brain doing if you just have a piece of music on and you're just sitting there, I guess?
If I'm just sitting and actually listening to the music, I try to enjoy it. If I'm not learning it, I try to shut off all my... I mean, I still hear. Some chords and some intervals are just, you know, I know exactly what that is. But I really do try to get into the music and feel and go where the musicians are trying to take you. And I love listening deep into bands and hearing all the little things. Just... The fret noise on string instruments or some overtones that, like, when a trombone player or something is blowing into their instrument, there's some sounds that come from around the mouthpiece area that you hear, but you don't really notice that you hear because, you know, the actual sound of the trombone is very large. So little things like that, I like to try to listen down into those and and it's nice. It's fun to... It's like a new world. You hear something new every time you listen to it.
I like the way you said, let the musician guide you. I think sometimes it is easy to be analytical, especially when you are a musician, or like... Which can be fun in a different way, but I think maybe it's different for different people, but I think ultimately, yeah, letting the musicians guide you is probably the way to go. What are some goals that you have for your own learning?
I have so many. I'm a forever learner. I want to be learning for the rest of my life. So my most recent big thing that I'm learning is cello. I've been working on it for about a year and a half now, and all my own. So not real practice, kind of like noodling and finding melodies and stuff like that. But I want to become a better composer. I love arranging tunes. I love taking familiar things and just doing dorky things to them and making it fun. And that comes a little bit more naturally to me. But I've always wanted to compose bigger things. So that's one of my goals that I think I'll reach, you know, maybe later on.
Sweet. Okay, final question. Tell us about your best show ever. Oh. You must pick one.
That's impossible.
I know.
Yeah, I think this, the one on, the best show that I can think of is just one of many. And but it's just, this one is on my mind just because it kind of happened recently. And it just has this, a special moment because it was playing the music of someone that I loved that wasn't with us anymore. And that was back in August when we played John Rapson's music for Esteban. And that, it was just so powerful because all the people on the stage, except for the three Colorado musicians, all the other people on stage were people that are just like so, so, so dear to my heart. The director, Dave Hagedorn, is one of my great, great friends, and to all the musicians up there. Dan Padley, Justin LeDuc, Ryan Smith, you know, I've been playing with them for forever. You know, it's when I really started taking things seriously. And Tara McGovern, now I've become one of my best friends. And Christine on cello, just another good friend that we made. And Niello, of course, another good friend that I made through John Rapson. So it was just a wonderful experience to really make that music come to life with those people. And for that, man.
I think the best part about that show was, like, it was obvious that it was just as much about the community as mm-hmm. the music. Mm-hmm. Like, the community aspect was so at the forefront. Mm-hmm. And, of course, yeah, John had brought a lot of community together in his life. So mm-hmm. kind of celebrating that was... Mm-hmm. And special
the worlds that he connected. I mean, because Kevin Burt was there too.
Yeah.
And Caleb Rainey.
Yeah.
Like all these different corners of music and art were just all together. And not to mention all the people that did the art and the slideshow and the lights and the sound and all that. Just really, yeah, really wonderful time.
Wow. Excellent. Well, Blake, always so fun to talk to you. So thank you. For doing the thing with us today.
Thank you so much. You're so wonderful.
Support for this podcast comes from Friends of the Englert and Fellowship for the Future members. Learn more at englert.org/friends. Ongoing support is provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Iowa Arts Council. Our intro music is Free the Bull by Dan Padley, and our interstitial music is provided by Iowa City Jazz Fusion Group, Wavecage.